This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. It is the 2nd of July 2010 here in the land of the rising sun, but still the 1st of July in the great white north, where I'm joined on the line by Dan Dix of PressForTruth.ca. Dan, thank you so much for coming on. It's a pleasure to finally have you on the program.
Oh, no problem. Thanks for having me on.
Well, as I say, I'm glad that we have this chance to talk, because I have been following your work at Press for Truth for years now, and I haven't had you on yet. But unfortunately, sometimes it takes a terrible incident to bring people together, and I could think of no better description for the recent fiasco in Toronto relating to the G20 than a terrible incident. But I don't even really know where to begin with all of the things that have been happening over the past weeks in preparation for this, and then, of course, over the past few days as the G20 actually took place. So why don't you just lead us through from whatever point you want, and tell us a little bit about what's happened from your perspective.
Yeah, for sure. I'm still myself a little bit almost speechless and quite overwhelmed and still kind of just taking it all in. I can't believe what transpired here in Toronto on the G20 summit weekend. It's just absolutely unbelievable, the things that I've witnessed, the things that a lot of other people have told me that they have witnessed. And we have a lot of video evidence that we'll be compiling more videos to show everybody some of the things that happened. Some of the key kind of important things to note are what took place on, first of all, the Saturday, then the following Sunday. It was on the Saturday when we saw all of these things that were gone on allegedly by the Black Bloc, where a lot of police cruisers were left in the middle of certain key intersections. And we have, riot police backing off from the area and leaving these cars alone. One of the cars in particular was there for up to 6 hours, left alone, no cops anywhere. And that's when the supposed Black Bloc had set fire to the cars. And now it's interesting that these cars were allowed to burn for upwards of more than an hour. They were reduced to almost molten metal, and that is because of they needed the media photo op to be able to post that all over the place so people would say, look at what these bad protesters are doing. But what people should really be asking themselves is, you know, the Canadian government spent $1.2 billion on security, and they'll have us believe that they couldn't stop a group of 30 or 40 Black Bloc guys from smashing up the city and, you know, blowing up a bunch of police cars. It just does not make any sense whatsoever.
No, it does not. And you do have some excellent footage of the cops backing off of one of the cars in one of your videos. Do you have footage of some of the other cars, or is there only the footage of the one car?
Yeah, no, we do. We still have a lot of footage to go through. We've shot a lot of stuff with a lot of different cameras, and we have a lot of people who have contacted me who want to send me their footage. So over the next few days and in the weeks to come, I'm sure the story is going to develop more as we find out more about some of the things that did take place here.
Right, and
now,
we are
on the.
Sorry, I just wanted to say we're also seeing some incredible analysis from people like Terry Burrows, I believe, on globalresearch.ca, and people already looking into the clothing and the boots and things that these so-called Black Bloc anarchists were wearing, and seeing some very suspicious patterns like we saw in Montebello. So perhaps no surprise there, but continue.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the craziest things that happened was the following day, where down at an intersection called Queen and Spadina, around, you know, hundreds and hundreds of peaceful protesters were surrounded by riot police, and they about 244 of them were arrested and detained and processed one by one. They were standing out in the cold and the rain, and they were completely surrounded and just scooped up. And it's all under the pretext of what happened the day before. A lot of the officers I spoke with said it was justified. They said, well, didn't you see what happened? Didn't you see what happened the day before? So that basically provided for them the excuse to not only clamp down on all the peaceful protesters who have a very legitimate message that they're trying to get out, but it also it somewhat justifies in their minds the $1.2 billion that was spent on security for this event.
Right, exactly. So how about from your own perspective? Were you caught up in any of these, or were you observing them from a distance, or how were you involved?
Well, the one right where that happened at Queen of Spadina, me and Charlie Veach were together, and just by, I don't know, maybe the grace of God, I don't know, but we ducked out of that one just in the nick of time to do the Alex Jones show. And basically, we ducked out just in the nick of time before everybody got surrounded. We went back and did the show, and then I got a call from one of our camera guys who was on the inside of where everybody was surrounded, and he said, "Dan, you got to get down here. They've surrounded us." So Charlie and I tried to get up there as quick as we could, but we were blocked at every single turn. There was riot police blocking every street, not allowing us to get up there to cover it. Two of our camera guys were inside of that area, and they have reported to us and told us that press was picked out first. They picked out anybody with a camera and grabbed them out of the crowd because they realized that they don't want eyes, you know, watching. So media was picked on immediately, and they just started rounding up anybody with a camera first to, I guess, cover themselves and make sure you know, there's no video evidence of the unbelievable atrocities that took place there.
Right, exactly. And of course, that's a key tactic for the police to use, although we have seen a lot of footage coming out, including even of that that arrest at Queen of Spadina from a distance. We've seen some footage come out from that. So people have been doing incredible work. Well, while you bring up Charlie Veach of the Love Police, I suppose we should talk a little bit about that horrific situation as well. And I think my listeners are probably familiar by now about his first arrest, but let's talk a little bit about his re-arrest as he was trying to leave the country.
Yeah, sure. He was about to board a plane at the Toronto International Airport when he was detained and told there was a warrant out for his arrest for impersonating a peace officer. Now, this all comes from a video that we posted on YouTube where Charlie is doing what Charlie does best, which is he tries to bring an element of humor to his activism. And we were just documenting everything. And at the end of the video, at the end of part one, he very obviously jokingly, tells a security guard that he's the British intelligence, you know, authorized at the highest levels. It was a really funny clip. But that is apparently the reason why they put out a warrant for his arrest for supposedly impersonating a peace officer. So they scooped him up at the airport, and Charlie was lucky enough, he managed to get a text out on his phone that says, "They got me, get help." And I immediately put the word out to InfoWars, and they put up the article, and the word got out. So we were able to find out where Charlie was taken and where he was being held. So I was able to go down to the courthouse there just yesterday to bail him out. So luckily, Charlie's going to be okay.
Well, that is good to hear, because obviously you guys were doing some incredible work in the days before and leading up to the G20. Tell us a little bit about some of the stuff that you did.
Yeah, well, we've been covering the G20, and especially the lead up to it, probably starting back about two months ago or so is when we started making pre-G20 video reports. And our goal has just been to document the entire event. Because as we know, the mainstream media is certainly putting their own slant on things, and people out there now are hungry for alternative information. They know that the mainstream media is not giving them the truth, so they're looking for alternative information on these types of issues. So we felt it was important to, we managed to put together a pretty solid team of cameramen and video editors, and our whole goal was just to document the entire event and try to get videos up there as quick as we can so that people can see basically what's happening from another angle as opposed to the mainstream slant on things.
Absolutely, and you have been covering this for months. I understand there was a town hall meeting back in, I believe, April, in which you talked to Toronto Police Representative George Tucker about the possibility of agent provocateurs being used at the G20 security, and his response was not particularly forthcoming. Can you tell us a little bit about that interaction?
Yeah, sure. I had the opportunity to get up on the microphone and ask the representative of the Toronto Police, who's going to be in charge of security at the G20. I said, you know, George, back in 2007, there was a summit in Montebello, Quebec, where three police officers were caught as agent provocateurs. They were dressed as aggressive protesters. They had rocks in their hands in an attempt to incite violence. So I said, George, can you assure us that the Toronto Police Force will not engage in any kind of police provocateur actions at the G20 summit? And he danced around the question a little bit and finally answered it by saying, I am not at liberty to discuss security issues. So he didn't say no, provocateurs will not be used. He didn't say they would, but he did say, basically, I can't discuss that in an open format, was his answer. Which is highly suspicious when you consider everything that took place this weekend. The representative of the Toronto Police was not willing to say that they would not use agent provocateurs.
Absolutely right. Very telling indeed. So looking forward then, where do we go from here, and what are some of the next things that people will be doing to continue the pressure on the police and on the city and on the province and on the federal government as well about what happened in Toronto?
Well, more information is coming out now that Toronto Chief Bill Blair has said that some of these laws that were supposedly passed were not even passed. It was all a farce. It was all a lie. So the people who were demanded their ID, searched their bags, were arrested for being within 5 meters of the security fence under this supposed Public Works Protection Act, do have a legal case against the police. And normally, in these cases, we would say, don't go after the specific police officer, go after the system. But in this particular case, I mean, these officers have sworn an oath to the Canadian Constitution to uphold the rights of all of us Canadians. And I think a lot of the people who are arrested, I'm sure that in their evidence bag, they will have a slip of paper which should have the officer's number who was responsible for any arrests. And I think people need to take up their case and go after these guys individually, because these guys cannot just say they were simply taking orders. That just does not work anymore. So I would like to put it out there. If you were any of the people who were at Queen of Spadina and was a part of the roundup and taken down to what is now being referred to as Trontanamo Bay, please get in touch with me at dan@pressfortruth.ca. We would like to interview you. We would like to get your story out to the world about what happened to you. So if anybody, especially in the Toronto area, is listening and they were a part of that roundup, please get in touch with me so we can get your story out to the world.
Absolutely. It's important that this comes out, and it's important that people continue to pursue, even against the officers who are as well a part of the system as we are. But unfortunately, if they go along with the brainwashing, then they become a type of enemy. And that is an unfortunate truth, and something that we try to prevent with things like the Love Police. But we saw that the Love Police didn't work so well at the G20 this year. So it's a very unfortunate turn of events, but hopefully we can try to make something positive out of what's happened by at least shining the light on the type of police state that Canada is increasingly becoming. Can you give us any final thoughts about what happened, or about the way this Canada has been projected in the international media because of their disgraceful handling of the security for the summit?
Yeah, I mean, I'm embarrassed and I'm ashamed of the Canadian government and the actions that were taken, especially on peaceful protesters, especially the roundups and the holding them. Upwards of 900 people were placed into the makeshift camp down in the eastern side of the town. At the Toronto Film Studios, where they had, cages set up with CCTV cameras and microphones. Charlie Veach, for instance, was denied water, denied food. He was strip searched 4 times. They turned up the air conditioning very high, so there was somewhat of a psychological attack, if you will, on the people who were being held in there. So I'm almost at a loss for words. I'm still kind of in shock about all the things I've witnessed here. I never could have imagined that I would see this in my own city, in my own country. We Canadians pride ourselves on being, you know, we're easygoing, happy people. We're peaceful. But when you have agent provocateurs and organizations like the Black Bloc who seem to be working with the police, it certainly makes things difficult for us. So again, we're going to try to do the best that we can to get the story out. People can stay tuned to pressfortruth.ca to keep an eye on some of our updates. And we're just going to try to show the world what took place here.
Well, I certainly hope people will stay tuned to pressfortruth.ca to find out more. As you say, this is a developing story, and you guys will have more stuff coming out, I'm sure, as you wade through the vast acres of footage that you shot. But finally, just tell people a little bit about the website and the work that you do there.
Yeah, sure. Press for Truth, over the years of just doing my activism, I've been contacted by many, many people all across the nation, and I've made a lot of really great friends. And I've put together a pretty solid team of people who are helping me to come out to cover these events. We have videographers and investigative journalists and political activists and things of that nature. So we basically do our best to document all sorts of different issues, all sorts of different events that generally the mainstream media is not covering. I started it back in 2006. And now things are starting to come together a little better for us. So that's pretty much what we do there at pressfortruth.ca.
All right, Dan Dix, Press for Truth, thank you so much for coming on today, and I hope we can talk again in the future.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot for having me on, and you keep up the great work.